I'm the leader of the AIM Oil and Gas Special Interest Group, and I want to thank you for joining our February session. And today we have a special speaker. We have Vicky Malice from Iron Mountain, who will speak to us today about a survey and the actions you can take to address the issues that were highlighted in the survey. So just before we kick off the presentation, if you are joining this presentation, make sure you are in a safe place, that you're not driving, and please make sure that you have the slides in front of you. So this is an audio conference only. We will You can have the slides in front of you as a PDF or on your iPad or as a print. And the speaker will tell us when to move to the next slide. As said in the invitation, the Q&A will be handled via our oil and gas discussion forum online after the session. So the link is not only in the invitation, the link is also in the PDF of the presentation at the last slide. So make sure that you go there and you can post your questions. If you have problems using the discussion forum, please contact me and I'll help you out. And with that, I would like to hand over to Vicky Malice from Iron Mountain. So Vicky, could you please introduce yourself?
I also do the product marketing. So I develop the new solutions. I monitor the modifications that are needed in the solutions that we currently provide. And then I'm responsible for getting information out largely in terms of white papers, trying to put ideas and information out for sharing among the oil and gas community. So I'm exclusively focused on oil and gas. I've been at Iron Mountain for about 7 years. I've been doing the work in oil and gas for about 2 years. And if we go ahead and get started, Denny, we'll go past the opening slide to the slide that shows the benchmarking white papers.
Good.
And here in this slide, you'll see the two sources for the information that I'm going to be talking about. The paper that's on the left is a large survey white paper that was done by a consulting company called Cohasset and in association with ARMA International and AIM. So all of the respondent, and I would add, Iron Mountain was the business sponsor, so we helped subsidize the research. We did not do this research ourselves. And this survey has been done every 2 years for about 8 years now. So when they look at this data, they can go back and they can track how the trends are evolving. And in the past, they've always done this survey sort of horizontal. So it covered all industries. In 2014, at the beginning of the year, we approached them and said that we would be very interested in subsidizing another effort that looked at number of responses to the survey that they received from professionals in the oil and gas industry. And we would like to pull those answers together. And we asked them to analyze those answers, which is what appear in this particular report on the left, so that we could compare the answers from the oil and gas industry about the state of evolution of information governance in our industry. And then we could compare that to all industries in general. We could see if there are differences that might point out, or if we follow the trends with all the other industries. And they were able to pull out 120 people from the oil and gas industry who answered the survey. That's out of a total of 1,500 total respondents. So when I'm talking to you about statistics in oil and gas, we recognize that these are not statistically significant at, say, 1 or 2% confidence interval. But if we're looking at big differences, right, if we see a very large percentage difference, then all of the parties associated with the survey are pretty comfortable that there's at least a directional change or something directionally different about the oil and gas industry. So I will be making links to all of these reports that I mentioned available to Denny, and that will then be available to you if you want to read all of these reports in their original form. The report on the left has a lot of data in it, and it's very valuable data. I'm only going to be talking about the big takeaways, right? The big differences or the important strategic things that it reveals. So you can go to this report and look at all the other data to see if that may support you or give you ideas for evaluating or modifying your own program. The original report on the left is, it's 33 pages long. So it's a lot of reading. And then if you look at the report that's on the right-hand side of this slide, I took that 33-page report and I distilled it down to 7 pages. And that may just be because I don't like to read that much. But I think if you don't have a lot of time and you're just looking for the big picture, then you might just want to read the report on the left. And so I'll go on to the next slide now. Hang on, Mike. So in addition to just looking at the answers to the survey, I thought it might be helpful to look at those answers in the context of how our oil and gas industry differs from some of the external pressures or trends that other industries face. And so there's basically three big trends that are impacting our industry that you see listed here. And one of them is this increase in the use of technology. And whether or not you live in a part of the world where unconventional drilling is currently being done, you still have the impact of a lot of new technologies that are coming into play that are going to be creating changes in the business that the business units face, and they'll also be changing the landscape of information assets that we all need to manage. So one example is in oil and gas, where what's happening to the upstream businesses is very different from what goes on in the retail business, and that's based on the different types of information assets. So upstream, where you have wells and fields and therefore well logs and rock, drill rock or drill core, those assets in the field and the information assets related to them last for many decades, sometimes the entire life of the well or the field. And so in that part of the business, those business leaders are looking much more at retaining those information assets, finding a way to access them digitally because many of them are older and they're in a legacy format of either paper or old magnetic media. And that is, and they're looking at this information because it drives, as you well know, revenue, right? They're all about increasing reserves, getting to the oil and petroleum products faster and making money. Whereas downstream in the retail sector, those folks are much more concerned about compliance, risk mitigation. litigation. They want to retain, you want to retain the information assets as long as they're needed, and then defensively destroy them so that you mitigate any risk of unnecessary discovery. So that's a difference in our industry as compared to some others. I think that's pretty much enough said about that. There also are a couple of relevant business trends that are either more common in oil and gas or more the financial stakes are bigger. So one, mergers and acquisitions. There are other industries that have a more prevalent amount of mergers and acquisitions, including banking, pharmaceuticals, but in our oil and gas businesses, this is extremely prevalent because of the cyclic nature of the industry, and it creates, as you well know, many issues around how do you manage all of these information assets that you inherit when you acquire someone that may not be indexed, classified, or managed in the same way you would want to manage your records. And then I just don't think I need to say enough about litigation. Next slide. So on this slide, you see the four big themes that they found in the larger study. And it's true for our industry, but it's also true for all industries. Information governance programs today are more common. They're better designed. They much more frequently include electronically stored information, but we have a way to go before these programs address all of our important issues and needs. And information governance is increasingly recognized at the corporate management level as an imperative for the entire organization. Organizations are realizing that they need to get better control over their electronically stored information, or they may never be able to catch up with the rapid proliferation of digital communications, mobile devices, and whatnot. And then the last finding shouldn't be a surprise to any of us. Legal holds continue to be a problem. Next slide. So were there any big differences between what we do or what we see and what we experience in oil and gas compared to other industries? And yes, there is. There's one notable difference, and that is the way or the organizational pattern in which records management reports into the corporate entity. And in oil and gas, about one quarter of the time, 26%, the records organization reports into IT. And that's very different. In other organizations, about the highest number that we saw was about 18%. So the more common situation of reporting into IT sort of begs to ask the question, well, does that make any difference, right? And while the statistics below this don't prove that it's the fact that records reports to IT that causes these differences, it does show that there may be some association because IT is more widely engaged and more actively engaged in oil and gas industry than in most other industries. And the big takeaway from this is, regardless of where and what department your unit reports, that you can see here that all the positive results that you can get from partnering closely with IT, even if you don't report to them. If you partner more closely with them, you'll be more likely to have improvements and measurements in place to manage your electronically stored information. You're more likely to get those folks to help you with automated processes for defensively deleting electronically stored information, and you are much more likely to get their help in identifying and implementing improvements that you need. So the next slide. So this is about the organizational engagement. And the good news story here is that almost 100% of us have retention schedules in place that we update at least every 3 years, if not more frequently, and that there's a large level of engagement from many different departments with our records programs to collaborate for improvement. But, and these are important because they're really strategic things, only 62% of our oil and gas respondents said that they have a mature cross-functional group in place for records improvements and management. Only 60% said they had senior executive level management support, and only 53, just over half, said that they had a comprehensive strategy in place for their RIM planning and programs and future direction. So the takeaway here, the big takeaway, is that these three last statistics are all tied together, right? You can get a lot more effectiveness, a lot more financial help, a lot more management support if you involve more departments to collaborate with you, if you can put a strategic plan in place so that management can understand and see your vision for the future, and then if you use metrics, because that's the language of the management team's business. And then the next slide. So these are the big things that if you only could do four things, these would be the four that you would do to have the biggest impact on your program. And you may take issue with this or not, but that's for the online discussion following this presentation. The biggest effective changes that you can make are to get more cross-functional involvement from other departments, including the business units, involved in your records governance program, and then to establish and implement a strategy, a written, articulated strategy, preferably with metrics that include a timeline for what you want to achieve and some measurement goals. How will you be able to know and communicate with management what you're delivering back to the organization in terms of value for what you're doing? And then, again, I mentioned having a written strategy to guide you. And then the fourth one is making sure that you're doing everything you can with these legacy records, particularly upstream, that have a lot of data in them that's still valuable to the business units, like the well logs, like the core analysis, like seismic, older seismic data, and get it digitized so that your business units can access it quickly and easily from a well-deck index electronic system. The next slide. So over-retention continues to be a struggle, and this really can be helped according to the people who answered the survey. Not quite half of them yet use automated tools to locate and preserve information for legal holds, but I think all of us would recognize that if it's an automated system, it's likely to be more consistently applied and defensible. And again, at the end of a legal hold, people are still really struggling to get those records that have been on hold it back onto their regular retention schedule and defensibly destroyed. And the most effective dial movers you can have to do that is to get management support from your executives, and to have a strategy that articulates a plan for doing this, what it's going to cost, and what it's going to return. So, next slide. Again, you'll see that this is a repetition of a lot of these previous comments, but that really is because you don't have to do 100 things to make significant improvements. You only need to do a few things, but they need to be strategic. They need to be well documented. You need to collaborate with other departments, including the business units, and you need to have metrics so that you can show to yourself and management that you've been successful. And it doesn't have to happen fast. You can approach this the way you would eat an elephant, like one bite at a time, and stretch it out over time. Next slide. And the best way to be a change agent in your organization is to begin to talk or continue to talk more about information as an asset and not just a risk. So shifting from that focus on fear and loss to a focus on what the value that information delivers back to the organization, or what value the organization will get to making changes that you need to have done to your program. Next slide. This is an example of a RIM cross-functional council, and I have a really great little case study that one of your companies likely comes from them that was done here in the States, and I'm not going to walk through it now because we don't have enough time, but I will be online and can answer questions about it. It's really how this organization went from 500 record categories down to 104, how they got funding to have a consultant come in and help them with the implementation, and it's a great example, and I'll just put it on the online forum. Next slide. So if you, or probably more commonly, some of the cross-functional people you're working with aren't well-versed in information governance, there are a lot of basic sources of information that can help you educate them. There are information like this from AIM, from ARMA. What I'm showing you here on the screen is a wonderful little, very short white paper that's like a recipe for how to approach information governance and what it means and why it's valuable to a business. And I'll make that link available through Denny. And then the next slide. These are more resources, white papers that are available. There's a great little white paper about event-based retention and strategies you can use, and I'll give all those links to Denny so that you have access to any of these materials that you might want to look through as a reference. And that concludes my remarks. I'll be online and eager to see the discussion.
Okay, thank you very much, Vicky, for that wonderful presentation. I think there's a lot of food for thought in there to look at these numbers and recommendations and reflect on our own organizations. You know, how are we doing? What do we want to change? And I think even just a few of those numbers will, you know, will give some food for thought for internal discussions, or maybe, you know, cross-functional discussions. So as Vicky said, I will post the slides, the recording. So there's an audio recording of this presentation online early next week. And I will also post the links to all these available resources online. So you will get them through the SIG oil and gas email update that I'll send out. So as said, the Q&A will not be done online. That will be done via our online discussion forum. So the link to the discussion forum is in the invite, and it's in the presentation on the last slide. Click go to the AIM oil and gas discussion forum. The only thing to note is that only AIM professional members can post questions there. So if you're not a professional member, you know, don't worry, just send the question to me and I will post it on your behalf, because we want to make sure that everyone's included in the conversation. If you have direct questions for Vicky, her email address is at the bottom of the presentation. With that, I want to thank everyone for attending, and if you know of other colleagues that might be interested in the Oil and Gas Special Interest Group, be they professional members or not professional members of AIM, please pass on the message and point them to my way. With that, I'm going to end the session, and I will look forward to connecting with you in March. Thank you. Bye-bye.